Hello, darlings. I'm back. I did my first stand-up comedy performance this past weekend. I think I mentioned that I've taken a stand-up comedy class, which was spectacular. It's organized through the Comedy Cellar, which is a famous comedy club downtown in New York. And the class was taught by this woman named Veronica Mosey. She's been doing this for years. She was a great teacher, a great editor of other people's works and other people's jokes. I got so much out of the class. It was 5 weeks long, and each week for the first four sessions, you came in with about 10 minutes of fresh material. So you had about 40 minutes of material by the end of week four, and you would perform that material in the class each week, and then she'd give you feedback and notes and edits. And then for the fifth week, you would take your 40 minutes of material and whittle it down to your best 5 or 6 minutes, and then she'd give you some feedback on that. And then this past Sunday, I went up on stage and I performed it at the Fat Black Pussycat, which is a very famous comedy club downtown. And it was fucking awesome. I think I did great. The crowd was laughing at my jokes. I think they landed. It was fun. I loved being up on stage. I mean, that's a surprise to no one. But I had a great time doing it. There is something incredible about that feeling of being up there and everyone's looking at you and then you make them laugh. That is electric. I learned a lot taking the class. There were aspects of it that were tricky for me. I think I've said before, and anyone who's listened to this show regularly would know, that my natural way of communicating is to tell stories. And when I tell a story, I like to add a lot of detail, a lot of color. I like to bring them to life. But it's hard to do that as a stand-up comic. First, your sets are limited to 5 minutes when you're starting out. You know, when you're like Chris Rock, you can have all the time you want. But when you're starting out, your sets are limited to 5 tight minutes. According to Veronica, when you audition at a club, if you go over 5 minutes, they won't ever invite you back. So you got to be really tight. And that's fine. But the harder thing for me is that I felt like I had to cut out a lot of the detail that makes my stories good. And I'm not the kind of comic who's going to get up on stage and just tell rapid-fire jokes. It's not who I am. That doesn't resonate with me. So for me, it's about taking stories and then I have to make them funnier throughout, right? They can't just add up to one punchline at the end. I have to pepper them with jokes. And that was a very difficult exercise for me. That is not natural for me. But I liked doing it and I liked learning how to do it. And I think I got better by practicing. So I got up on stage. I told 3 stories. I kept my set to 5 minutes and 17 seconds. So I do need to trim it a little further. I got feedback from Veronica, the teacher, yesterday. She said that I stepped on my laughs a little, which means I didn't do a good job of pausing for laughter. And I need to do better at that. But I was so focused on the clock and on managing my time that was hard. But otherwise, she told me I have a great stage personality and that I was very entertaining. And that's like the coolest feedback I could get. There were people in the crowd, strangers in the crowd, who I don't know, who came up to me afterwards and said I created amazing narratives and they loved my storytelling and they loved my jokes and I had them laughing a ton. And that felt great. I loved that. While I was up there, I mean, I don't get nervous. That's just never been me. I'm not like a nervous person. But while I was up there, I found I don't think I felt nervous, but I felt out of breath. Maybe because I was talking nonstop without taking a real break because I was so focused on the clock. And then I got in my head that the whole audience could hear how out of breath I sounded. And I started getting worried about that. But I have a recording of the show. Like I just recorded myself as a voice memo while I was doing it. And I don't think I sounded out of breath. There's a video of the show, which I'm hoping to get soon. And then I'll be able to see. But man, was it super cool. It was a ton of fun. Even if you have no interest in being a stand-up comic, it was just a fun exercise. I met great people in the class. There were so there's a Monday class and Tuesday class. I was in the Tuesday one, but there were a couple weeks where my schedule was screwy, so I had to go to the Monday class. So I met people in both. Great people, super nice. Nice new friends to make. So, you know, I got a ton out of it, and I loved it. I'm going to start going to some open mics in New York. It seems like the open mics, the way they work, there's a bunch of them every day. And you pay $5 to get 5 minutes to perform. Sometimes it's $5 and you have to buy a drink or buy some food at the restaurant or bar. And then you get 5 minutes of stage time. And what I've heard is that the open mics are tough because most of the other people there are other stand-up comics, and a lot of them aren't even paying attention to you when you talk. And so that's tricky because you're performing, and if no one's paying attention, no one's going to laugh. And then you can get in your head that you bombed because no one laughed, but in fact, it's just that no one was paying attention to what you're saying. They're all working on their own material. But I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to go to a few open mics. It'll be good to just practice being on a stage, practice getting up there in front of people, and let's see how it goes. Like I'm not sure I'm going to turn into the next Dave Chappelle, but like let's see how it goes. Let's see if I can get some gigs and get some attention. I don't know. I mean, I felt like I had a good 5 minutes, and I loved doing it. So let's see where it goes. I'm thinking of having my buccal fat pads removed. I think that's how you pronounce it. Or do you say buccal fat? I don't know. These are the fat pads in your cheeks that you go to an oral surgeon and they make an incision in your mouth and then remove this pad of fat and gives you this ghoulish look with these sunken cheeks. Should I do that? What do you think, guys? That, first of all, that's an insult that needs to make a comeback, calling someone ghoulish. I feel like that's a term that you don't hear much anymore. Yeah, I'm not actually going to have this done. Because it looks stupid. This is a trend that should not be a trend. It looks horrible. And it's going to make you age. There are all these beautiful women who are getting this done. And when they get older, their faces are going to look dull and lifeless. You need fat to keep your skin looking healthy. And there are tons of celebrities doing it. There's that woman from The Queen's Gambit. Remember the chess show? She had it done. And the Olsen sisters had it done. And I get it. There are some women who have like kind of chubby chipmunk cheeks. That's a good alliteration. And so I guess they need to do this maybe, or they think they do, but please, can we stop with this? This reminds me in the early 2000s when women were over-tweezing their eyebrows so that they would be like a really thin pencil line. That was horrible. That did not look nice. These trends in body modification do not look better. And I got to wonder what made this a trend. Because it kind of makes these women look a little androgynous. I could theorize, I have no idea if it's true, but I could make a theory that this sort of androgynizes women and masculinizes them a little, and that maybe the fashion industry is pushing this. Maybe that there's so many gay men who have power in the fashion industry and they're pushing this masculinization trend. I don't know. You could make that argument. I'm not sure if there's any credibility to it. But these body modification things do not make you look better. And I don't understand why people keep falling for this stuff. Look, I've never been a fan of plastic surgery. I think it looks weird. I've said that on the show before. You see these women with fake breasts and plastic surgery and fake lips. And I don't see the difference between that and a trans woman. They're both surgically constructed. I don't really want to sleep with either of them at all. I just don't find that to be attractive. I really don't see a big difference between them. So can we just knock it off with the buccal fat removal? It's not nice. It's a dumb trend. And you can tell. If you look at the faces of famous people, you'll be able to tell if they've had this done. Which kind of raises for me an interesting question. Like, when you look at someone's face, if you look at a photo of someone, can you tell if they have certain vitamin deficiencies? Is that something you can see in someone's face? I don't know. I watched the Super Bowl. It was a good game. The Chiefs won. I've said before that we have way too much gambling in sports. We have legalized gambling in most states now. You can do internet gambling through DraftKings and FanDuels and Caesars and MGM. The list goes on. They all have these internet casinos. And it used to be if you wanted to bet on the outcome of a sports event, you had to do it physically in person in a casino in Las Vegas or illegally with a bookie. But now you can do it in almost every state, legally, on your phone. Download an app, put some money into an account, and then watch it disappear. It used to be that if you went to a sporting event, most of the advertisements in the stadium or arena were for various products and services. Now, it's all for internet casinos. When you watch sports on TV, most of the ads, they used to be for cars and for beer. Now, like 80% of them are for internet casinos. This is going to backfire. We are going to end up a nation of gambling addicts. And that is going to have majorly destructive social repercussions. It feels to me like the lobbyists for the gambling companies pushed the politicians to allow this. And they dangled that it would create jobs and taxes and whatever. But it's going to make us into a country full of addicts. And we're going to regret this. And I think the lobbyists had their way with other things. They had their way with like the companies that sell the opioids. Look how that fucking worked out. Now we have entire towns and cities where people are fucking zombies wandering around on fentanyl because they can't get the pills anymore. Look at the social damage that this has caused. And now we're just going to do it with gambling. So it's a bad idea for that reason. But there are other reasons why it's a bad idea. It's a bad idea because I believe it is going to corrupt sports. I don't think it's very probable that athletes are going to throw matches. I mean, maybe one will or something, but I don't think that's very probable. It's harder for that to happen because a lot of these athletes are highly paid. They have too much to lose, right? If you give some star player 50 grand to throw a match, it doesn't move the needle. They have too much to lose. It's too risky. I think where it's going to come into play is through the referees, because it's a lot easier to bribe a referee. And I think so much of what the referees do is about judgment calls. Should they call a penalty? Should they not call a penalty? But you know, if a referee doesn't call a few big penalties over the course of a game, that can tip the scales a few percent in favor of one team or another. And it's a lot easier to mask what they've done because it's so much judgment that plays into it. And we see it anyway with famous players. If you're LeBron James, you can get away with a lot of things that average players cannot, just because he's famous. So I think there is going to be more of a corrupting influence in sports. And I think the leagues right now, they love this because there's so many more advertisers and so much more money pouring into it. They love it because it makes people watch. Because if you bet on a game, forget the Super Bowl, you bet on a game, you live in New York and you're not a fan of any other teams except the New York teams, but there's a game between like Detroit and Arizona, if you have money on the game, you're going to watch every moment of it. You're more likely to pay for a TV subscription. And if you watch every moment of the game, you're going to watch commercials, which means they can sell the commercials for a higher price. Most of those commercials are for more internet gambling, by the way. And so I think they like that. I think the leagues like it because it makes people watch and pay more attention. But I think they're going to regret it when it ends up being a corrupting influence in the integrity of the games. I think it's not only the internet casinos that can have an influence on the referees, by the way. I think that the league is very well aware that they can influence things that way. There were several games with highly controversial calls in the postseason this year. And there is a theory, I have no evidence of this theory, but there is a theory that the NFL wanted a Super Bowl between the Chiefs and the Eagles because they wanted a Super Bowl with two black quarterbacks. And we talked last week about how there's never before been a Super Bowl with two black quarterbacks because for a long time, there was racism. And people believed that blacks wouldn't make good quarterbacks, that they didn't have the presence of mind, that they could only be receivers. So there was this racist belief, and this was the first year when there was a Super Bowl between two black quarterbacks. And so I think there is a perception that Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, he wanted that narrative. And so the NFL put their finger on the scale to make sure that that happened. I think he also liked the fact that each of those teams, the Chiefs and the Eagles, there's brothers on either team. The Kelsey family has one son on the Eagles and one son on the Chiefs. And so during the Super Bowl, you had Roger Goodell sitting there with the Kelsey mom on one side of him and Damar Hamlin on the other side. And if that narrative takes hold, that is also going to be very damaging for the NFL. They had the Super Bowl halftime show. Was Rihanna performing this year? And now, I've never enjoyed one of these halftime shows. I don't like the music that's played. I don't find the theatrics of it to be even slightly entertaining. I think it's so boring. But this one was particularly terrible. Now, first of all, it was terrible because she sang Kanye West songs, which can we just not? This is the same guy who was on TV a few months ago praising Hitler and talking about going DEFCON on the Jews. Why are we performing his music at the Super Bowl? The most watched thing there is. Why are we performing his music there? Who thought it was in good taste to have that in the set list? I mean, look, it's not like Rihanna sang anything. She didn't sing one word. You could see occasionally she held the mic to her face, and sometimes she didn't, but the sound did not change at all. I think it was just being played on speakers. And her lips, when they were moving, they didn't even sync up with the words that were coming out of the speakers. So she didn't sing his songs. They just played them on the speakers. Why? Why are we playing Kanye West songs? And why did they hire this Rihanna? I mean, she was a horrible performer. She didn't dance. She didn't sing. Why was she even there? But it was a the actual football played. It was a good game. Both teams played well. It was an exciting game to watch. But thankfully, football season is over. It can be baseball season again soon. That's what I've been waiting for. Enough with the other sports. Nobody gives a shit. Can we just get back to baseball? Because that's really all that matters.
The Vietnamese have more or less cornered the market on smoothies in New York City. They have this great business with those little carts. They buy fruit that's a couple days old. Maybe it's slightly bruised. But when you put it in a blender, no one can tell. So they buy a banana and an apple for a few pennies, they blend it, and then they sell it for $8. And that is a great business. Remember, like, drinking smoothies used to be considered like something that only fancy people do. Like, you'd be the butt of jokes because you wanted some blended fruit on the go. Well, no more. The solution is BlendJet 2. It's a portable blender that allows you to make smoothies at work, a protein shake at the gym, even at the beach. What? Blending at the beach? What is this? A blender at the gym? What? Anyways, BlendJet 2 is small enough to fit in a cup holder, but powerful enough to blast through ice and frozen fruit with ease. BlendJet 2 is whisper quiet, so you can make your morning smoothie without waking up the whole house. It lasts for 15 plus blends and recharges quickly via USB-C. Best of all, BlendJet 2 cleans itself. Just blend water with a drop of soap and you're good to go. With over 30 plus colors and patterns to choose from, there's a BlendJet 2 to complement just about any style. I rock the urban camo print because I'm a certified badass. What are you waiting for? Go to blendjet.com and grab yours today. And be sure to use the promo code THELEESHOW12 to get 12% off your order and free two-day shipping. That's The Lee Show and the numbers 1-2 to get 12% off your order and free two-day shipping.
We've got these Chinese balloons everywhere. Maybe they're not Chinese balloons. Maybe they are aliens. Because I like that theory a lot more. It makes me very happy that the White House press secretary had to come out yesterday and do a press conference just to announce that there is no sign that these are aliens. I love that that's what things have come to. So let's assume they're Chinese balloons. If I had to guess, these balloons have floated over the U.S. for a long time. And I suspect that our radar systems were calibrated to pick up fast-moving objects like missiles and rockets and planes. And I think now that we are recalibrating the radars, we're detecting a lot more of this slow-moving stuff. And we're going, holy shit. So I think these were always there, but I think we're only now just starting to detect them. And it's my guess, I don't know, but it's my guess that the reason the Chinese are doing this is to test the waters. They want to know how provocative they can be and what happens if. If we do X, what's going to be the response from the American public, from the politicians, from the media, from the military? So they're testing the waters in these relatively low-stakes ways with something that gives them plausible deniability. They can say, it was a weather balloon. Science, whatever. They can test things in a way just to see what happens. That's very similar to what China has done in other regions. You know, in the northeast of India, there's a part of the country called Ladakh. It's up in the mountains and it's rocks. There is nothing up there. But China and India have a dispute of where the border between their two countries should be. And it runs right through Ladakh. Truly, we're up at like 11,000 feet with nothing but rocks. China says the border's in one place. India says it's in another place. And each side has soldiers patrolling on their own side. Now, these soldiers hate each other. They've been taught that the other side is bad. But both countries know that the soldiers are going to fight. And so they don't even let them have guns. On either side, they only have medieval weapons. They have clubs and sticks and spiked bats. And they march back and forth on their own side of the border, patrolling it. Every once in a while, though, they get into a skirmish and they start throwing rocks at each other and they start hitting each other with their clubs. 2.5 years ago, there was one that was quite notable. There was like 20 Indian soldiers who were thrown into a river and died, and a bunch of Chinese who were killed just because they got into a brawl with each other over this little border. And I believe that China intentionally started that skirmish just to test the waters. And they did it at the same time that they flew planes over Taiwan and they fired missiles over Taiwan. They were being provocative without actually attacking. And they wanted to see if they did this in two different areas at the same time, what would happen? What will America do? What will Taiwan do? What will India do? They wanted to know what kind of response they would get. And these balloons are the same shit. It's not a dumb idea. It's not stupid of the Chinese to do this. But if I had to guess, this has been going on for a long time and we're only now detecting it because we're recalibrating our radars to spot this slow-moving stuff. You know, also in the news this week was, or I should say, interestingly, it was not in the news this week, but should have been, was that earlier this month, there was a train that derailed, a Norfolk Southern cargo train, and it was passing through the town of East Palestine, Ohio. Small town, 5,000 people, middle of nowhere. And the train derailed, and it was carrying very hazardous chemicals, including vinyl chloride. And the train derailed and it exploded, and that caused a fire that lasted for several days. And finally, after like 3 days, the firefighting crews that specialize in chemical fires made their way there. It seems like they kind of bungled the response, and it took a long time to call those guys in. But they called those guys in, and they managed the fire down into a controlled burn to reduce the how much of these toxic chemicals were being released into the air. But the damage was done. I mean, this released a lot of hydrogen chloride into the air. It released phosgene into the air. This is bad, toxic stuff. This is the kind of stuff that when it mixes with water produces acid rain. It's the kind of stuff that when it gets into the groundwater supply will increase the risk of cancer. This is highly carcinogenic, highly flammable stuff. And there is a cloud of toxic chemicals that have been released into the air. And the long-term effects of this could be devastating, right? This entire area could become uninhabitable. Or everyone's going to get cancer and die. I mean, this could be like an Aaron Brockovich type situation. This could render the entire area uninhabitable, like Chernobyl. But what's weird to me is why this isn't getting more attention in the press. I asked a bunch of folks who are very well informed about the news. And I said, what do you think about this? Not one of them had heard of it. Which makes you wonder why. Why is this dramatic disaster not being covered? Right? Remember the thing in 2010 with British Petroleum, the Deepwater Horizon spill that where there was tons and tons of oil that was leaking out into the Gulf of Mexico? That got a ton of press. Why not this? It makes me wonder. There's a new show on Netflix called Copenhagen Cowboy. And it's directed by Nicholas Winding Refn. He is a masterful director. He's probably a little bit of an acquired taste for a lot of people. His movies and shows tend to be slower paced, but they're beautifully directed, beautifully acted, incredible cinematography. He made the movie Drive, starring Ryan Gosling, which I loved that film. So I watched the show. It was outstanding. It's super weird. I mean, really weird. Intense in a good way, but intense and weird, but it was outstanding. So I strongly recommend this show. Every once in a while, I give TV recommendations here, and strongly recommend Copenhagen Cowboy. I enjoyed it a lot, but just be prepared. It's like a little slow and it's a little weird and you got to get yourself in the right frame of mind for it. But I enjoyed it a ton and strongly recommend you, you check out this show. That's all for now. We'll be back with more soon. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And remember to look us up on social media and on Substack, leebressler.substack.com. Become a paid subscriber. And we'll be back with more soon.